Hello, everybody. Josh Brown here, back for another great episode on Franchise Euphoria. Well, today's episode is brought to you by IndieFranchiseLaw.com, a leading resource in the franchise space to help you if you're considering buying a franchise, turning your business into a franchise, or growing your business through a licensing or franchise structure. So go on, check it out, IndieFranchiseLaw.com. I think you'll find a lot of valuable and free information as you continue to kind of weigh franchising and licensing and the growth of your business. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's episode. Well, I'm thrilled to welcome to Franchise Euphoria, Tom Britt, the CEO and founder of Town Post Network. In full disclosure, Tom is a client of mine. Town Post Network's a client of mine, and they're doing some really unique and interesting things in the local community publishing and magazine world. Town Post Network is a true work-from-home franchise with no lease build-outs, low startup costs, and no need for staffing. They provide all the infrastructure and support needed in the cloud and from their main offices in Fishers, Indiana. They are also leading the charge with what they call the digital integration of their publications, digital and social advertising programs in their local communities that gives them and their franchisees visibility all month long. Believe it or not, many publications, many print publications, do not allow their franchisees or licensees to put their magazines online because they're afraid of the competition. They're afraid of people poaching their customers. What Town Post has done is kind of flipped that on its head. They've gone one step beyond that and launched townpost.direct, which is an online store which shows their complete media kit available for purchase online. They really feel, and Tom really feels, that their integrated approach with print, digital, and social marketing in targeted communities is the future of media in general. Tom is a gregarious guy, very knowledgeable, tremendous background that you'll learn all about in today's episode. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this interview with Tom Britt. Hello, Tom. Welcome to Franchise Euphoria. How you doing?
Josh, longtime listener, first time caller. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, this interview has been a long time coming. We've known each other for several years now. You're a client, you're a friend, you got a great franchise, and we're going to talk all about that. But gosh, we've been talking for years at this point about you coming on, and for one reason or another, I don't know, life just gets in the way, right?
Yeah, and it's funny too, because when we first started talking 7 or 8 years ago, maybe, I don't know when we started talking, but a lot's happened since then. I was a licensee at the time, and we did a story about you in one of our publications, and lo and behold, here you are, you know, this year, many years later, you know, good buddies and a great attorney for us, so.
It's been awesome to see your guys' development. I mean, you have a really great background for what you do with the Town Post Network. And obviously, we want to spend time talking about, you know, your franchise and how you've built it and continue to build it and so forth. But always love to get your background and story, because I think it really will help people understand you and your motivations and how you sort of got to where you are at this point.
Yeah. Well, I started out at, you know, I'm in my mid-50s. I've got 3 grandchildren, so I've seen a little bit of life over the years. I started out getting out of college at Ball State in 1987, and my first job was with actually a typesetting company, which was the precursor to desktop publishing. And when I was at Ball State in my last semester, there was a Mac computer. I don't know if many people know this, but Steve Jobs sent Mac computers, or Apple computers back in the day, to like the top 300 universities in the United States, and Ball State got one of those, but nobody knew how to use it. It was the first computer that had a mouse, had this little clunky, chunky keyboard. And I went in and actually taught myself how to use it, because I was just intrigued by this desktop publishing thing, which wouldn't even call that back then. Because of that, it landed me this job, this typesetting company, because I understood typography. And my first job of all things was working on the night shift on magazines. So I was doing magazine paste up and design back in 1987. And I saw the whole desktop publishing revolution happen. I stayed kind of on this cutting edge of that. I was one of the first people to migrate away from printers doing your design for magazines to actually doing them in-house and using desktop publishing and font kerning from our typesetting company and all that. In 93, I started my first publishing company on my own. It's called Progressive Publishing. And if many people remember back in the early 90s, desktop publishing was all the rage. But there was this thing called the interweb, you know, the internet, that was coming around the corner.
I've heard of it. Tom.
I don't know if you've heard of it or not, but yeah, it's going to dominate, I think, the market someday. But back in 94, 95, you know, this was, they were talking about print going away. They're talking about magazines going away. They were talking about the life as we knew it was going to change. And here I was, a guy with a publishing company, had 16 employees, and I'm thinking, good Lord, what's going to happen? So, you know, like I normally do with these types of things, I embraced it and we started building websites as part of my publishing company. We built the first e-commerce site in the state of Indiana, hosted it at iQuest down in Broad Ripple. Back then, it wasn't like you could go pick up an e-commerce book and just do an e-commerce site. We had to fuse about 15 different things together, write custom scripts to make it all work. And the lesson I learned out of it was, don't build websites for other people, because you're just figuring it out for everyone else and you can't ever charge for all your time. So I ended up starting my own .com back in 98. So I had a .com startup and I had a publishing
company. And that was early. I mean, you know, starting a .com in 98, I mean, that was pretty on the edge here. I mean, I don't think there were many people familiar with .coms at that time, unless I'm wrong.
Yeah. Well, what was funny about it, I was looking at the internet, and my theory back in 97 was that everything we knew was going to be eventually through an IP protocol, internet protocol, because the internet had so much more possibilities than we ever had through coax cable or anything else. And so with that mentality, I said, well, video will all go online, and so will audio. And if you got to remember, 97 is when Cuban filed for his S-1 to take broadcast.com public. And so I was reading his filings, and I think it was February or January of 97. And I was reading what his business plan was, and I was thinking, that's it. I'm going to start a TV guide of video and audio on the web. So we started ChannelSeek.com, and that company really grew very quickly. But the funny story about that is that I had a .com company in one part of the building, and I had my publishing company in the other, two separate sets of payroll, two ownership structures, but they're right across the hall from each other. And it wasn't until 2000 that I was actually able to make money in my .com. And the way I made money was by printing a magazine called the Channel Seek Magazine. And so that process of learning how people value print and people be willing to pay $5,000 a month for an ad to go into a Comcast bill or a Sprint bill, that's when I really started monetizing the .com. Unfortunately, as we all remember, if anybody lived through the .com Holocaust, there was a bubble that popped slowly starting in March of 2000 and finally kind of ended in 2001. And so I was able to sell both those companies in the end of 2000 and just went into consulting. But in the back of my head, I just knew that print and internet and digital all had a place together. And if you could figure that out on a localized level and make it work, that people would be endeared to that. And that was a germination of that whole town post idea back in 2000, 2001.
Well, and you're part of a community that in India is well known as sort of the Geist community, but nationwide, certainly, you know, not as much. But you then are a founder of a @geist.com sort of newsletter type. Talk a little bit about that, because it's so much more than a newsletter. And that sort of formed, you know, the foundation for what later became Town Post Network.
So if anybody thinks 16 years ago I set out to start Town Post, or they're crazy, it was actually a lot of dumb luck and just a lot of good ideas proven right. In 2004, I started doing @geist.com newsletter. So it was actually called @geist.com newsletter because I wanted the website to be a key component to the print. We eventually dropped the @geist and just called it Geist Magazine about 8 years later. But for the first years there, it was just known as a black and white community newsletter. We mailed it out to just to over 2,800 people around the Geist Reservoir area. It's ironic because the month after we started the @geist community newsletter, the United States Postal Service started their Everydoor Direct Mail program. And so our postage rate went from like 45 cents a piece. We got it cut in half. And so when we did that, we're actually able to mail to more people. And it took us about a year, but we got the circulation up to about 10,000 homes. And I just kept reinvesting it back in. I was still consulting for a publishing company on the side, and I was doing some .com consulting. And so this was really a side hustle for me. I never really did it to make a career out of it per se. But as it kept progressing, as the technologies like, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all these other digital platforms started integrating into what we were doing. And on parallel track to that, all the newspapers were starting to draw back. They were letting loose of a lot of their staff, and they're letting go of a lot of that local content. A lot of the local newspapers were going away or cutting back to once a week. And so that vacuum had to be filled by somebody. And I thought, well, you know, we're kind of in a good place to do that. Why don't we do that? And so we started down that trail. We just started licensing the idea. Again, I had a background in magazine publishing and a whole production side. So I spent a lot of time, and I still do, just trying to refine and perfect that back-end infrastructure so that somebody in our Town Post network can buy a franchise and work from anywhere and basically have all the support of a publishing company without having anybody at their house. And so that whole thing has just evolved. And, you know, thank God for technology, because I think this would be a much harder franchise system if we didn't have this cloud-based portal that we have and all the cloud-based support.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, over the years, I mean, you've realized the benefit of building up your community, you know, regardless, you know, your physical community you're in, your online community, digital community. But doing that through this newsletter component, which directly then led to Town Post Network, what really gave you the idea to franchise the model?
Well, it's funny because, you know, the first few years, I would say the first 6 or 7 years, I did one magazine here in Geist. I did a second one over in Fishers, and unfortunately it failed because that community was very different than Geist, but also the city announced an annexation. So it was kind of Hatfields and McCoys, and it was just a bad time for me to have a magazine with Geist on it, walking around a city that hated our territory. So, but you know, as we kind of went down that path, the idea was to get more and more people buying into what we were doing and get more participation from our residents and from our businesses. And so we were just trying to get people engaged online through social and through print. As I started meeting other people, they also wanted to do the same type of thing. So I said, well, how do you do it? Well, a lot of what we do is stuff I've just known over the years. It's hard to, you know, hire me to do it. So I said, well, why don't I just license you our platform? And so the first license agreement was only 2.5-3 pages long. I wrote it myself. I didn't know Josh Brown back then. So I think I went on Rocket Lawyer or something and bought a template and just customized it. But basically the idea was that we would own the domains because I'm still going to host and maintain your website. You can use my processes. We'll do your invoicing for you. We'll handle all the printing in the publishing business. Printing and postage is your two biggest costs. And so if we can somehow keep all those together and buy that in bulk and negotiate the pricing as best we can, it's good for our franchisees. So we want to make that piece of it. And so our first couple licensees came into our network. And, you know, my idea was, well, if we do them, if they're far enough away from Geist where I live and they fail, nobody will know that they failed because, you know, they're too far away. So we did a couple that were probably, you know, 25, 30 miles away, one on the south side and one up on the north side. And lo and behold, they actually worked. And so I thought, okay, this model can be replicated. We can get other people into our system, use our platform, use our processes, and we could scale this thing up. But we started having some issues with licensing. And for anybody out there that is in licensing now, there's some heartburn, but they just don't know where it's coming from. My biggest heartburn, and I think why I came to you initially back 7-8 years ago, was I had a lot of licensees that wanted to kind of do their own thing. You know, they didn't really want to use my design for the logo or the masthead. They want to use their own design. They wanted running heads across all their pages with little categories like school news and all that kind of junk. And I didn't want to junk up our magazines with that kind of stuff. But I really didn't have a way to enforce our design standards and just our processes. And, you know, when I came to you initially and I said, hey, I have a license system. I've got, you know, at that time, I think I had 3 or 4 different licensees at the time. I kind of shunned away from franchising early on because in our industry, we're trying to be a local voice in a local community. And a lot of times franchises in history have not been great local partners in local communities. So I didn't want to throw the word franchising around and the word local, support local, in the same breath. So I've always kind of shied away from it. But, you know, thanks to this attorney named Josh Brown, who read through our
game. Checks in the mail, Tom. Checks in the mail.
Checks in the mail. Just take the credit on our next bill. Something will come up between now and then. But no, but thanks to you. I mean, you said you really should just convert this to a franchise, and it will, you kind of explained to me the high level about how a franchise works. And I have zero experience in franchising. Zero. I mean, you say the word franchising, I think of KFC and McDonald's. That's all I knew back in the day. And so I had to get a crash course on franchising. I had to get our license agreement system set up to handle franchising, because a lot of our stuff was in the cloud, but there were some things that just weren't at that time. And so probably the best excursion we went through in that process was just me writing the operator's manual. You know, I start writing a manual and I realize, man, that's stupid. Why am I doing it that way? And I go back and I'd find another platform, or I'd find another software, or I'd find something that would make it easier. And I say, okay, there you go. I fixed that. And then I start writing some more. And I say, well, wait a minute, that's kind of dumb. Why am I doing it that way? And so that whole process of becoming a franchise actually was very fulfilling, but it just took us, like, you know, a couple of years to get it done. But we got it done in 2016. And now I guess it's a foot pedal on the gas.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it's interesting because of the model, you know, focusing on the local community aspects, you know, bodes well for dividing up territories and finding areas where people can come in. And then I remember, you know, obviously there was a lot of dialogue and so forth about, and it's important for people who are contemplating a conversion to a franchise system right now to really understand that, you know, your role as an entrepreneur, your role as the CEO or the head of the business dramatically changes when you franchise, you know, as opposed to, you know, spending all your time worrying about your few locations that you've had such involvement in. Now you're not only worried about that, but you're worried about how you grow the system, how you attract the right people to the system, how you continue to make it a value-added system and proposition for folks to come in and to really gain a lot of benefit and opportunity from the system that you've created.
Right. And to that point, I mean, if you look at the first year we started franchising, 2016, it was May. We were actually licensed in Indiana, and you know, you got us registered in some other states. We had a lot of interest from people already. But, you know, my role in those first, that first year or two was just trying to figure out who does make a good franchisee. And, you know, honestly, we had some licensees that did not convert over to franchises and we're better for that. We've had some franchisees that have come in and we've had to coach them up, or we've had to help them a lot. And we started finding the personalities of the people that really can excel at this type of business. And so that's been a learning process as well. And, you know, the things that I look at now in our system is, you know, we have a support staff now that, because we do all the design and editing and we do all the back office billing, pay all your bills, everything for all of our franchisees. So they don't have to hire anybody. We already have that set up and it's already turnkey for every franchisee. And what we're finding is that my biggest challenge now, which is actually a good place to be, is training. Is the ongoing training about how the technology and how these platforms and how social media and digital can play into our publications. Because frankly, you know, printing a magazine, we don't judge ourselves on how many pages we print a month or how many copies we print. You know, a lot of magazine franchises will have on their websites, oh, we print over 280 billion magazines a year. I don't even know what that number is. I don't care. What I care about is the reach that we have through each of our communities. And our reach is actually, we have a dashboard. It's all in the cloud, but our reach is determined by your circulation. Circulation is direct mail, which is 95% of it. But also, where are you going with the other ones? Are you going to doctor's offices? Are you going into retail? Are you going to other places for pickup? And then on top of that, we also put the online exposure. You know, our Facebook pages and our Twitter accounts and our Instagram accounts, we have analytics set up on the backside of all of those. I mean, they all report into a dashboard. So our reach a month is the number that I look at, because we can't print more magazines, but we can sure as heck reach more people through social and digital platforms. And that's what we do the other 30 days a month. You know, you get the mail once a month with our magazine in it, and hopefully you sit down with it on a weekend with a cup of coffee and you read it. It's front, you read it front to back because it's all local content. You're not getting it somewhere else. And people love that. But you got to engage with those people 30 other days a month. And that's how we leverage our social and our digital platforms and even our mobile platforms to make that happen. So, you know, we look at things a little differently. than most magazine franchises in the fact that we look at things in totality and we look at things holistically, and we're not people who are married to print forever. I mean, I kind of hope it doesn't go away. I'll be proven wrong someday, eventually, but wherever this market takes us and wherever the industry takes our franchise, we're going to be the pioneer of that. And we're going to disrupt the magazine business. And it's going to not just disrupt the magazine business. It's going to disrupt all media because they're all trying to get local, and we're already there. And we already set up shop, and we're already growing in that market.
Yeah, that's the thing that's always been fascinating to me, you know, is that, you know, when you look at Google as an example, their push and everybody else's push to get hyper local, right? Because people, when they search, if they're searching for a result, they don't want to get something if they're looking for something in Indiana that's in California, right? So, I mean, right. The idea of getting search going more hyper local, same kind of concept with what you're doing, is you're focused on the hyper local community and people, regardless of technology, regardless of where we are in the technological realm of the world, are always going to want to be connected to their own communities, wherever those are. So you present a really interesting option and a good option to provide good content on their local community. Because the concept is with the magazine, whether it's the physical print version or the one that's digital and online, and all the follow-up and stories and all the stuff that you do, as you said, throughout the rest of the month in any given month, is that, you know, obviously you're telling people's stories who are local in those communities. And so when it gets sent to various households, people are interested about, oh, yeah, what happened at our school, or what happened in the neighborhood, or what happened, you know, in our community. And so it's really got a sort of a special place there. But you guys are unique in that you are on the cutting edge of the technological side of things and not just married to what is a slowly dying breed of just print, right? I mean, if you're just relying on print, then that's going to be problematic.
No, you're going to die. I mean, print has made it this long. There are several newspapers who got flushed out or bought out or consolidated back in what I call the earthquake of 2008, which was the first rumble in this industry. But this tsunami called COVID-19 is going to take out a lot of newspapers. Radio stations are suffering from it because the local businesses, those small mom and pop shops that have been subsidizing them for years in spite of themselves, are now faced with a decision where I can't either advertise, or if I do, I need more than just a print ad in my newspaper once a week to make sure people are coming in. And we just saw the news over the weekend. I saw three different publications, two locally. One went out of business for good. Another one, a newspaper is cutting back to 5 days a week. It's always been 7 days since the 1800s. Another Miami newspaper just went out of business. So the people who've clutched on the print and have not adapted and changed with today's world are going to sink eventually. It's just how long will it take them to sink and how much money are they going to spend doing it? Our model is very different. We can sustain things like this because we just adjust our page counts up and down. Our profit margins are already kind of built in. A franchisee doesn't have to go lay off staff or furlough their writers because everybody's 1099. All of our freelance writers and photographers are freelance. You know, we organize them through our platform and they get paid through our platform. We pay for all of their freelancers, but we handle all that for them. But they're not hiring and firing anybody. We've already got that system built and it's sustainable. You know, it's kind of funny. I was looking at our numbers from last year to this year, and you would think that last month was a terrible month for us. And it was in the fact that we didn't have our normal growth rate. We had a 36% growth rate year over year coming into last month, and we had 18% growth year over year last month because of COVID-19. So we only grew 18%, and that's a bad month for us.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you know, especially given that the whole entire economy has been forced shut down. I mean,
right.
There's just no activity right now. Right. But you guys are going to be well positioned coming out of this. I mean, who is an ideal franchisee for the Town Post Network?
That's a great question. And to be honest with you, we're still figuring a lot of that out. But I can tell you the attributes of the people that do the best in our network. The people who do the best in our network are people who have a strong B2B sales background. I don't want people who work for a newspaper. I don't want people who worked necessarily in radio sales or any other type of media. I want people who've been in B2B sales. And the reason I say that is because if you look at our top performing franchisees, they had a strong B2B sales work ethic. They got up on their own. You know, they didn't have to have a sales meeting at 8 o'clock to make sure they were at work. They can work on their own at home. They have good interpersonal skills, one-on-one with small business owners. They can walk into a doctor's office if they come from pharmaceutical sales, or they can walk into any kind of manufacturing and have a conversation with somebody and get to know their business and try to understand it and actually just generally try to help them. And it's not always about money. I found that people that get into our business, if they're in it only for the money, it's a difficult road for them because, you know, you can do 2 to 3 magazines on your own in our network. We actually encourage you to do 2 to 3 territories in your first 2 to 3 years. But if you're only doing it for money, you kind of run out of reason for living after your third one's up and it's kind of on autopilot. With me, like when I first started my first year, I don't know how much I made, but it wasn't a lot of money. And actually, I think I lost money my first year because I kept reinvesting all my money back into more circulation. But for me, it wasn't about the money. It was about helping my community. I want to make Geist a better place. I want to tell good stories. I got tired of reading the news and reading the, what happened with the police reports last night, who got killed, who got murdered, how many stabbings there were, rapes, and all such stuff. And it's like, I just want to read about the local brewery that just opened up. I want to hear about the new restaurant owner. I want to hear about something, a kid at school that's on this national list of something or another that maybe I didn't know about. And I've seen that kid at Marsh before, at Kroger, at the local grocery store. I've seen that kid. That's who that kid is. I mean, people love that kind of stuff. And so you don't have to be the mayor of your community, but if you like to be a connector in your community, you like to make things happen, you like to help nonprofits, you like to help for-profits, you like to help small businesses, but you also have a good sales B2B background, we can teach you the rest. The publishing side of our business is actually, we've got it down to a system. It's pretty simple. You don't have to understand how printing works or how page forms work. Don't worry about any of that. Don't even have to worry about how invoicing happens. We take care of that as well. But if you understand your community, you have a heart for your community and you want to do something to really give back. And you know, what we're finding too is we've got a couple franchisees that have families and they want to leave a legacy for their children or have something their children can be involved in. To me, that's a huge part of our business. We're very family focused for our internal staff, our support staff. We have really good benefits for our support staff, but we treat them like they're our family and they have to leave because their kid's sick or whatever. They just work from home that day. And franchisees, you know, have that same lifestyle. We want them to put family and put family values first. I've actually turned away franchisees in the past because they weren't that type of person. And I just don't want to deal with, Charlie Sheen from 2 and a Half Men. I don't want to deal with that in my network. I want to deal with people that have a value for families that I would feel comfortable representing Town Post at a soccer tournament, taking pictures for a photo spread for the next month. I want to feel good about those kinds of people. So that's a long answer, but, you know, good sales background, good interpersonal skills, and also a good bend for their community and their families. Those are the things I'm looking for. And if they hit those 3 checkboxes and they've got interest and they really want to commit to this, we'll make it worth their while. And it'll be a great payout for them down the road.
So a couple other things I want to talk about before we end. And one is this whole idea, and you've mentioned it a little bit throughout this interview, but I'd love for you to dive a little bit deeper. Talk about the whole digital integration of your publications. What does that mean? What does that mean for somebody who's thinking about what you do or contemplating reaching out to you?
Yeah, that's a good question because a lot of people hear the word digital and it just blows right over their head. And they think that digital just means the ads that run on our website, which that is part of it. We have inventory on townpost.com. But digital to me and to our network is very, very deep. We have a CRM solution. It's a cloud-based CRM that we just moved to last November. And so we track everything through our website, email blasts going out through our clients. Anything that happens through our website, through our LinkedIn pages, Instagram pages, Facebook, Twitter, all that comes back into our CRM. And so what we have now is a lot more data and analytics about people who are coming to our site. We may not know their name or their email address, but we know their IP address. We kind of know where they're coming from, and we kind of know where they've been on our site. And it really helps us gain some insights on things that they might be interested in or things they might want to do. The thing that we just launched honestly, right after the COVID-19, you know, I guess quarantine started back in March, I was already close to launching this. It's a virtual media kit. It's a website called townpost.direct, and it's the ability for people to actually go online and shop for advertising packages through us, through our magazines, with no salespeople. So they actually can go into our site, they can see a magazine, they can see some social media packages we do, they can see a digital package that we offer through a magazine or through the network or wherever it might be. And they actually can shop right there with the pricing right there in front of them and just go ahead and buy it and just bypass salespeople altogether. We think that that's going to be not only crucial during this COVID thing because of contactless sales, but we think that a lot of people, thanks to Amazon and everybody else, would rather buy something online at night versus have to call somebody, schedule an appointment. God forbid a sales rep shows up and spends a half an hour or overextends their stay and stays an hour trying to sell me something I don't want. You know, our industry, the print industry in general, has been full of pushy salespeople since Ben Franklin, and it hasn't changed. And so what I want to do, again, disrupt the market. Well, how do you do that? Well, you put all your pricing out there and say, here's my rates. Go buy my stuff. And you can buy it direct. And guess what? The next phase of this and what we're integrating this week and next, if they go to TownPost Direct, they actually can see our analytics through our website in real time. So we're actually going to show them our website traffic. We'll show them our Facebook page, our social media traffic. All that will be available through TownPost Direct. So they actually can go around us completely, bypass salespeople, and just buy into the local markets one-off.
And see the results.
And see it right there. Exactly. And nobody's doing that. You know why? Because the industry has been full of these guys with suits and egos who are scared to death to leave their media rate card with a client. It's funny. I put a blog post up on our franchising.townpost.com site. And that's our site we have for people who are interested in franchising, obviously. But I put a blog post up about TownPost Direct, and this is the traction we're getting on early on. And the beauty of it is, these people, this industry has been so old school for so long that I would go into a client meeting. They call me and say, hey, Tom, I want to buy some advertising. Would you come meet with me? I got to schedule a meeting with them. I got to drive over and see them. I walk in. That sales rep that was meeting with them a half hour earlier is just now walking out the door. I probably know the guy because he probably sells in a money mailer or some other direct mail campaign of some sort. I walk in right behind him. And one of the guys, this happened just 2 months ago. I said, well, so-and-so is here. He said, yeah. He said he wouldn't even leave his media. He wouldn't leave his rate sheet here. And I said, why? He said, because I didn't want to buy from him. And he was afraid that I would give it to you because he knew you were coming in afterwards. And I said, why is he worried about me having his rates? We're two very different print mediums. He said, I don't know, dude. You know, I've run into that like once a month for the last 16 years. And with me, I look at this like, I want to be as transparent with our people as possible. I don't mind if my competitors know what we're doing because they can't do it and they won't do it.
Yeah, because your value is more than just your price.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, it's part of that disruption process in the marketplace, but I really feel that we've sustained a recession. We've now sustained this COVID-19, which looks to be not nearing an end, but at least I think we're through the hardest part of it. We can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that the way we positioned this, we've built it all in the cloud, and the way we allow franchisees to work from home independently with our support and basically operate a full-blown social, digital, and print publication on their behalf, and let them be the salesperson, let them be the face of that community, that has worked really well for our folks. And I'm just really proud of them. But on my side, it just makes me try even harder and gets me more excited to implement more of this training stuff and get more people up to speed on how we do these things. Because at the end of the day, our franchisees, in order for them to be successful going down this road, we have to keep everybody informed and trained as these new technologies evolve and just explain how it works. And I think that becomes our ongoing challenge is I want to make sure when we bring somebody in, not only can we support them and get them trained to get them up to speed so their runway is as short as possible, but how do we support them ongoing without me fielding 100 phone calls a day on questions about Facebook boosts and things? And that's the piece that we're working on right now.
Well, it's interesting because I saw something. I was watching a show. I can't remember what it was, but I saw something the other day, and somebody made an interesting comment that, you know, what COVID-19 has really done is it hasn't so much changed our future as accelerated our future.
Yep.
I thought that was a really smart comment, because if you think about what businesses are doing and what you guys are doing and everybody else is thinking about, it's COVID-19 in large part has just forced people to act faster than they were otherwise willing to do, but they were going in that direction anyways. I mean, you were moving towards and in the digital sphere, but then with COVID happening, it's pushed you faster in there. But what's interesting to me, just hearing you speak about it, is, you know, everybody's thinking about, okay, when do things go back to normal? Well, it's not just about the businesses opening up, but it's about how people transact their business. And that's really a lot of what you're speaking about, is being attuned to the fact of how do people want to be sold to? How do people want to buy? You know, people don't necessarily want you walking in their business and trying to sell you on something. They want to be able to go, like you said, on their free time, at right. their whim, and go find the information they do, go research it so that they can make an intelligent decision on their own and not feel like they're forced into something.
Right. And what I was looking at, you know, again, data tells us a lot. And when we implemented this new CRM platform network-wide, I started getting carbon copied on all the leads that come through the website. So, you know, as of, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, we were no different than any other magazine. If you wanted to advertise in one of our publications, we have 18 now in Indiana and Kentucky. If you wanted to advertise in, say, up in Kosciuszko County, Indiana, and you put a lead through our form on our website, you know, we got to follow up with you the next day. And what I started looking at is I started looking at all these leads coming through our site, and I realized that 92% of them came in after 5 p.m. And I'm thinking to myself, well, heck, these people are looking for stuff at night. Why? Because they run their businesses during the day. They don't have time to meet with me or call me, and God forbid, call a sales rep and get them to show up and never leave. But if I could put this stuff online and put it out there for them, and they can see the pricing, they can build their own media plan, and they can see it right there in their shopping cart, just go ahead and pay for it. Why wouldn't they do that? You know, I get stuff on Amazon because it's convenient. Yeah, I could drive over to Target and get it, but if I get on Amazon, it'll show up in a few days, I'm done. And I think people are the same way with their marketing for their small businesses. They don't have time to deal with salespeople. Now, I still have a subset of people, and I see the majority of my people still like to have the phone call. I still go to lunch with them every once in a while. They still send me insertion orders. We still do old school business, and that's perfectly fine. We're not going to turn that away or make them change the way they operate. But this new conduit has opened a new venue for us. And what it's really done, Josh, is it's opened the ability for us to sell micro payments or sell micro pieces of content. So in other words, the smallest ad we had in our magazine up until 2 months ago was an eighth page ad. It's the size of like a business card. It typically runs $200 to $250 a month. Well, that's the smallest thing I could sell you. So guess what? If you came to me and you started a new plumbing company, you just left, you just got out of the military, and your parents are helping you get a plumbing truck wrapped, and you start working as a plumber, $250 a month is a lot of money to throw out an ad hoping it works. But now I can actually do smaller transactions. I could do smaller classified ads for $25 or $50. And we started selling these congratulatory ads because of the class of 2020, not having basically a commencement ceremony this year. So we started saying, hey, what if we told parents they could buy a small ad? And we'd run it in our magazine to congratulate their kids on graduating high school or college. And we started selling these things for $25 to $75 a piece. And we've already sold over 200 of them in just the last 3 weeks, just because, you know, they can afford that. It's manageable. So that's what this Town Post Direct is going to do, is open up the door for us to do more micropayment type things and get the smaller things that, typically, you know, generally, I wouldn't go spend an hour at a sales call to sell them a $50 ad for their kids. But this allows them to do that. And I think that's going to help our franchisees as well, because it's going to open up their doors to selling those smaller things to smaller companies and really get that local business, which has been our dream from the very beginning, be able to help everybody in your community. So how can I do that? Well, you know, I can't give everybody free ads, but if I can make it affordable for them and keep their name in front of people and keep them busy, that helps my community, and I'm all in favor of that.
Well, if you want to learn more about the Town Post Network, you can find them at townpost.com. That's TOWNEPOST.com. You can also go to franchising.townpost.com. And of course, you can find out about them on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and just go to @townpost. And as I think Tom mentioned earlier, you can also go to townpost.direct to learn all about their online media kits. Tom, this has been a real joy. I mean, thanks so much for coming on and sharing. I mean, I love where you're going with this. Obviously, you know, I'm biased to a degree, but I've always, I think I've always told you that you being on the cutting edge of the technological side of this industry is really a differentiator because historically, when you look at this type of an industry and you think about, you know, a print publication historically, that oftentimes doesn't jive with technological advancements. But what you've been able to do is combine the two quite successfully. And I think it's a credit to your entrepreneurial background and you as a person being able to come up with that whole idea and push it forward. Yeah. So kudos.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. And I refer to the print industry in general as Jurassic Park. You know, it's a lot of dinosaurs running around and a lot of people who've just hung on because, you know, they've been in business for so long and people just know them. But that tide is changing. And if people want to be on that cutting edge, you don't have to understand how the technology works. We're going to train you on how it works and we'll let you leverage it for your own good and your own family's good. But we welcome any calls. And you know, right now, I think we're focused on Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, kind of the states around Indiana right now primarily. But if the right person or persons came along from some other states, we certainly would entertain that. We just found it's easier to launch a magazine if you have a publication that's not too far away that some of your advertisers may know. So when we sell, like for example, down in New Albany, which is one of our target territories, we'll take those Louisville publications with us on those calls. And people have heard of Middletown and Jeffersontown and St. Matthews. So it makes it a little easier. So I just welcome any calls. And if it's not the right time for you now, at least get your name in so we can kind of keep you informed. And some YouTube videos that we're doing, just kind of talking about the industry so you can keep up with it.
Well, and here's my promise to you. I'll have you on at some point between now and the next 3-4 years, okay? So we'll do it again at that point.
Well, I'll put on my calendar for 2030 then.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Right. Have a great day.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode of Franchise Euphoria. If you enjoyed this episode or have enjoyed the podcast in general, I would really appreciate it if you could go to iTunes and leave me a rating and review. It really helps to get this podcast out to more and more people. So the easy way to do it is go to iTunes and in the search box, put in Franchise Euphoria. You will then see my cover art and you click on my smiling face that says Franchise Euphoria and then click on the link that says ratings and reviews. It's that simple, but boy, oh boy, does it mean the world to me when people leave ratings and reviews. And like I said, it really helps get the show out there. Once again, would love it if you would go to iTunes and leave a rating and review if you enjoyed this episode or other episodes of the show. And until the next time, happy franchising.